Okay. So there, what Ecclesiastes is saying is that the reason why people don't raise this question is not because the question is not a question. And I've seen many intelligent people discuss this question, even scientists. Well, you know, they're not philosophers, but here and there, you know, you see they do express themselves in their personal and the anecdotes about them. They express themselves they talk about these topics. And I have found that what they usually do is to try to downplay the fact of death. Well, it's something that, look, we have to, let's not think about it. If you think like that, then you can't live, and, you know, that's not the way to think. But, you see, that's not what Ecclesiastes is all about. Ecclesiastes is an honest person. He's not going to just put something out of his mind because it's going to make him unhappy. That is not a motive of a true philosopher. And King Solomon was a true philosopher. Therefore, King Solomon is very straight about this, very blunt about this. He says, if you're going to raise this thing to a superhuman level, and that's what we do, then how come she doesn't seem to indicate, and he has no indication from nature that this is really superhuman, because nature treats the fool and the wise man in the exact same manner. Not only the fool and the wise man, but the animal and the man, okay? They all succumb to this, simply the physical fate of death, and the physical fate of death cannot be talked away. If you want to talk it away, you just want to fool yourself. But the fact is, when I look at reality, I don't see any indication that the life of the wise person is that which I think. I think, in other words, when I look for something yisroon, that extra, something fantastic, something which is great, which the human mind is looking for, that satisfaction of something really great, you're going to find that there is no recognition whatsoever in nature for that greatness, which is a very disturbing type of thing. Again, his question is a psychological question. It doesn't disprove the fact that wisdom is important and that wisdom is the greatest thing in the world. He doesn't disprove that. All he's saying is that if a person is honest, it is very difficult to carry on or to attach such great importance to wisdom when there's no indication from nature that it really is so superior. Okay, that's the type of question he asks. Okay, again, he brings up this David mentioned verse 18. In verse 18, what he's doing is he's returning to the life of the. He does swing back and forth, but his principles are straight. What he's saying is that over here he says in verse 18 and 19. And 20, he says, and 21, what he's saying is that the empire builder, there are two fantasies the empire builder has. One is the fantasy of pleasure, that he's going to enjoy himself. That fantasy, he says, immediately he sees is very frustrating. Then he says that there's another fantasy, a fantasy that he built an empire, something less. A person wants that. This emotion that's looking for greatness would be satisfied if a person could find that he produced something lasting, an empire. What do tyrants want? What they want to do is to produce something that will last, that will be lasting. So the empire builders. But what he says here is, he says, that's an impossibility because he says that a person has no control of what happens after he's gone. And he has to leave it, let's say at best he leaves it to his children, if he has children, okay? So he says, yes, but then the problem is like this, or to another individual, anyone. But the problem is, you have no way of knowing whether that person is going, what he's going to do with all your work. You work meticulously to accumulate this thing, and he can destroy it in no time because he's a fool, okay? Which means to say the fantasy of eternity that's attached to empire building is again an illusion, which if a person were logical and he thought into it, he would never venture on such an endeavor. That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying basically, that any person that were really logical wouldn't try to do any of these things, which means that if a person were really logical, he would be devastated, wouldn't do anything. But what King Solomon is saying is that that is really the that is what a logical person should do, basically. Nothing, because when you analyze everything you do, it really is worthless. Okay? So you'll say, well, what kind of a philosophy is that? That sounds like a sick kind of philosophy. So what are we supposed to do? Sit, at home and do nothing? Well, King Solomon would say to you, if you want to be rational about it, you have a choice. If you want to be rational, then you have to see that life basically is not satisfying. You can't tell me that because you want to live, that's circular reason, because you want to live, so I'm going to say things are great. Then you're simply fooling yourself. You must be, if you're really looking for truth, then you must be honest. And if honesty tells you that it's worthless, then you're stuck. You have no choice. It's true. Functionally, you're stuck. But that's the truth. You have to look at the truth. Okay? King Solomon is demanding that a person, that the truth comes over everything. First, we must know what the truth is. All right, and let's not worry about results. Now, he says, he has the, give me one second, he has the religious life where he mentions, okay, if you take a look at 3:16, okay, where he says, and also I've seen under the sun that in the place of judgment there is wickedness, and the place of righteousness there is the wicked, okay? Now, over here, you see, over here what he's saying, let's just go further. So I said in my heart that the righteous and the wicked God will judge, because there's a time for everything and for every action. What he means is as follows. He means, okay, he takes a look at the world and he says, well, okay, let's see, justice. That's something we could say is very important. All right, that's something which gives a man hope, which makes a person think there's something real out there. This person is endowed by God with a sense of justice. And certainly that is something which is a worthwhile institution. And when a person sees justice, it picks a person up. When a person sees injustice, it puts them down, because it makes them feel that everything is hopeless. But now he says as follows. He says, okay, but I took a look at the places of justice, and I saw that there was injustice there. Why was there injustice there? For a very simple reason. Because people really aren't interested in justice. They're interested in the appearance of justice. But real justice, they're not interested in. Now he says as follows. He says, so I said in my heart that the righteous and the wicked God will judge. Okay, so the guy got away, but God's going to judge him. But then he says, later he says that, you see, the 19, he says, the fate of man, the fate of the animal, and there's one fate to them. As this one dies, that one dies. He says, and there's nothing special in man or extra superior in man over the animal, because everything is nothingness. All right? So there what he says is that this we don't see corroborated from reality either, because we would think that the person that is righteous, a righteous person, there should be some indication in nature that he is treated differently. And yet we see nothing in nature that makes any difference between the righteous person and the evil person. The evil person can live to be 85 and 90, and the righteous person can live to be 85 and 90. There is no, we do not see nature differentiating. There again, we have a problem when we speak about the righteous and the wicked. The problem is, it's all very nice, but to say that the righteous man is going to, the righteous man God is going to judge and the wicked God is going to judge, but do we see a corroboration in nature for such a thing? No, we don't. There are many many Nazis that are alive and well into their 80s. We do not see in nature that the person who is wicked lives a short life and the person that's righteous lives a long life. So there is no corroboration again. So now if we're going to take righteousness, and we're going to say that this is the thing which is the great thing, not wisdom, but the righteousness is the great thing, well, how come, again, there's no indication from reality that this is so? this is the question that King Solomon is raising. Now, I just want to show you on the same point something which I think is quite important. And that is, you see, take a look at 8, chapter 8, okay, chapter 8, take a look at chapter 8, 11, 12, and 13. Now take a look at what he says here. He says, see what he says? He says, because of the fact that the evil doesn't occur swiftly, that's why the heart of man is filled with the idea of doing evil. All right? Let's take one more verse. He says, a sinner does much, much evil, and he has a long life. Okay, God gives him a lengthy existence. Now take a look at what he says. He says, I also know that it will be good for those that fear God. It will be good for those that fear God that... it'll be good for those that fear God that they should fear him. And then he says, and it will not be good for the wicked, and the wicked will not have lengthy days like the shadow. He who has no fear before God. So it sounds like a contradiction. First he says that the person will that the wicked person can do evil for a long time, and get away with it, right? And then he says, but I also know that it's not true, that those that fear God will have good, and the wicked will not have lengthy days. So what is he saying over here? This is an absolute contradiction. Okay, but in the light of what I am explaining, these verses show exactly the nature of his question, you see? His question, again, is not contradiction. Why? Because the basic philosophy of Torah is that the person that is the good individual, the one that fears God, has a good life. And the person that is evil has a bad life. Okay? Now, that he maintains is true. But there are two ways to maintain it's true. One way to maintain it's true is from the lifestyle itself. In other words, if I could show you that the person that is evil must intrinsically be unhappy because he's torn by his emotions, he's torn by fantasy, he's in conflict with his mind, he's going against reality, he is a person like the prophet says that the wicked are turbulent. So the turbulence in his existence means that every day that he exists is a torturous existence, whereas the righteous person, every day that he exists is a wonderful experience because his soul is in harmony. He's an individual that has a harmonious soul, and the enjoyment in life that the righteous have is not comparable. One moment, living one moment as a righteous person, even a month or a year, is by far a greater existence than the longest lifespan possible for the wicked, because the wicked is a person who's in disharmony. His soul is in disharmony. His soul is at odds with itself, and therefore cannot enjoy life. So what King Solomon, that's what King Solomon says over here. I know, he says, he asked the question. He says the reason why people do evil is because nothing befalls them suddenly. A person goes to something evil, he's not going to get struck by lightning, okay? And that's why he says, that's why people continue to do evil. Because they expect the punishment to be swift and sudden by God. And no, you see that a person can do evil, and he can live a long life. But he says, I also know the fact that it is good, it will be good, it is good for the person that fears God. And I know that the evil man will never know good, and he will not, over here he says, his life will be like a shadow. Over here when he means a shadow, what he means is not in length of time, but he means in terms of his quality of life. the quality of his life is like a shadow, is nothing. Whereas the quality of life of the righteous is the height of the potential that a human being has for life. So therefore, what he's saying is as follows. He's saying that I know that the principles of the Torah are true. But one thing that's disturbing, he says, is that according to the way the human psyche works, again, it would seem that a person is looking, an individual is looking for something that he can consider great. And if righteousness is something that I can consider great, then it should not be true that the righteous man suffers the same fate as the evil man. And it should not be true that the wicked should be able to be wicked for a very long time and nothing happened to them. Okay? So you understand what his question is? His question is not that the life of the wicked is equal to the life of the righteous. No, there's no comparison. He says it. I know that it's not true. I know that is good has a much better life. But again, it's not something that I could point to and say, this is something I could attach that emotion of greatness to and say, wow, this is the life. If that's the case, then nature, again, should really support that system, and it should take the life of the righteous and raise him above any kind of harm, and the life of the wicked should result in immediate destruction and harm. But it doesn't work that way. So when you look around at life, he says, again, there's no support for the idea that the righteousness, that is the unbelievable thing, the awesome thing that exists for human life. If that were the case, then there should be some corroboration from nature, and there isn't. Okay? That, again, is his question. That's his type of question. It's the same thing where he says, in the beginning, he says that where he says everybody dies, so he says, who knows the soul of a human being that goes up, and the soul of the animal that goes down? He's not denying it. Again, grammatically, what he's saying is that it's true. But he's saying, that's very nice to net in your mind, but still it's disturbing that there's nothing out there in nature that supports that. Okay? That is the gist of his question. Okay? All right, I think we've clarified the nature of the question of King Solomon and the fact that this question can only be raised by a person who is in the framework of Torah. It cannot be raised by a religionist. A religious person doesn't like to see these things and likes to just sweep them under the carpet. Cannot be raised by a philosopher, because a philosopher doesn't have information other than his own philosophical ideas. So either he proves them or else he doesn't prove them. But King Solomon is in a unique position because he has information from Torah, and yet there is a very disturbing reality out there that doesn't support the human being's need for feeling that he's attached to something. There's something out there that's fantastic. Whether it's a secular kind of a life, whether it's empire building, or whether it's a religious life, or whether it's the life of wisdom, these lifestyles are not supported by reality in the manner that we seek for them to be supported. In other words, they're not supported in a way that we could say, hey, this is a fantastic thing, look out there. Okay. And man seeks corroboration from reality. Okay. What I'd like to do now is to... By the way, the height of man seeking corroboration from reality is messianics. What is the whole concept of messianics is people, but this is actually a low level which King Solomon wouldn't even address, because King Solomon is addressing true philosophical problems. But the people that are into messianism, the reason why they're involved in that is because they don't have any knowledge of the principles of Torah. And since they don't have any knowledge, they really at bottom are looking for support from some kind of miraculous event that their system is correct. Okay, but that's only for a person that doesn't even have the knowledge of Torah. A person that has knowledge of Torah doesn't need any external corroboration for the fact that it's correct, because he knows it's correct through an understanding of the divine prophecy and an understanding of why these facts that has been transmitted to him are true. But still, King Solomon says, the fact that it lacks the external corroboration is something which is disturbing to the human psyche and prevent it from functioning in the full sense. And Torah demands that the psyche of man function in the full sense. Now, there is an answer to his question, but we're not going to get to it this week. What I'd like to take up now is to go back to something that we mentioned before, and that is the statement. Okay, because we saw that last week. The statement of the rabbis in the tractate of Sabbath 30b is that they had wished to put the book of Kohelet, of Ecclesiastes, into Geniza. Now, this word Geniza, all right, you'll hear many many historians or Bible critics that know of this rabbinical statement. They'll give you all kinds of interpretations. The rabbis banned the book, they'll tell you, or for some reason they couldn't ban it, but they wanted to ban it. Well, you see, I want to make one thing clear, that these the words of the rabbis can only be understood if you know exactly what these terms mean, and they have a very unique meaning. The word banning is not the word Geniza. Geniza means the word lignos. In Geniza, as you're probably familiar with, that word does not mean to ban. The word Geniza means when a Sefer Torah becomes old and it starts to disintegrate, so you put it into Geniza, which means you bury it, you put it in the ground. So what the word Geniza means is to put a Sefer Torah into the ground. That's why we don't have many old Torahs, because that's still the halacha. The halacha is they're supposed to bury it. Now, what exactly do the rabbis mean over here when they say that they wished to put the book of Kohelet, of Ecclesiastes, into Geniza, and why did they want to do it? All right. So the rabbis said because his words contradict each other. And then it says, and why didn't they? Why did they not do it? Because in the beginning and the end. He states that the important thing is to follow the way of the Torah. Okay, I'll explain to you exactly what that means. The word to ban something is not gnos, but it's le'esor. And there are books that are banned. The rabbis did ban certain books. Okay, books on physiognomy, for instance, that a person's face indicates whether he's... There are books on physiognomy. They are even around today, that the shape of a person's face indicates whether he's intelligent or not, or what kind of a soul he has. These kind of things were banned by the rabbis, okay? We don't believe in such type of things. So that was banned, but that's not lignos. They would never use the word lignos. That means they should simply say that it's prohibited and should be destroyed. But to understand what the word lignos means and why they wanted to do Geniza to the book of Ecclesiastes, you have to understand really what the problem was. You see, now there are certain things, as I mentioned last week, that are endowed with the quality of the written word. Okay, and the five books of Moses are unique. They are the written word, and that's from God. Now the books of the prophets. Okay. Also can be endowed with the quality of the written word. All right. Now, what the rabbis wanted to do? You see, what's the difference between the written word and between the non-written word? And what do the rabbis mean when they say if there was contradiction? There are many contradictions in between Mishnahs. There are hundreds and thousands of contradictions straight through the oral law. All kinds of questions and answers. And the question is because you have something which seems to be contradictory. So this is nothing new to the rabbis. The rabbis, the rabbis' analytical life thrives on what seems to be contradiction. So why were the rabbis disturbed over here with contradiction when all the Mishnahs are elucidated in the manner of showing a contradiction between one source and another source and then explaining it? Obviously, they didn't think that King Solomon wrote something which is intrinsically contradictory. That would be silly. So they knew that there was a deeper understanding behind the words. So what's wrong with that? The answer is you have to understand the difference between the written word and between the oral word. The written word is something which every individual has a right to own. In other words, it is something which is public property. Okay, it's domain of the public. The oral word is something which is a deeper understanding of the written word. That's only transmitted to scholars. Okay. Again, one is not permitted to write down the oral word. Not permitted to. The reason why we have the oral word in writing is simply because we had no choice. It would be this, if it comes to a question of losing it completely or writing it down, permitted to have the lesser of the two evils, which is write it down and don't lose it. But if you could keep a system of memorization, which was done for many, many years with people that had phenomenal memories, so if you have a photographic memory, then it should be done that way preferably. But once the people were driven out of the land and the system was already in jeopardy, so the decision was made that if we don't write it down, it's going to be lost. But it is not supposed to be written down. Okay. Now, what the rabbis are saying is they wished that the problem with Ecclesiastes is that a book that's made for the public should not be externally or even on the surface appear as if it's contradictory, because then you're just going to confuse the people. So contradiction is fine, but it's okay in the oral system, but not in the written system. That's why the rabbis said that they never said they wanted to ban Ecclesiastes. What they said was they wanted Geniza. What is Geniza? Geniza is when you take the written word and put it in the earth and allow it to disintegrate. So what does it mean over here? What do they wish to do? They wished to remove the value of the written word from Ecclesiastes. They didn't want to ban it. It would then become an oral law. It would become an oral tradition. In other words, once they would remove the sanctity of the written word from it, and that determination of whether it should be written word or not is determined by the scholars of the generation. So the scholars of the generation have a right to say that this book should not really be endowed with the quality of the written word. If they do that, it's not banned, but you aren't permitted to write it anymore. And since you're not permitted to write it, it's going to be lost to the masses, and the only ones that are going to have it are the scholars. Okay? So I'm explaining what is meant by the term Geniza, that they wish to take Ecclesiastes and place it into Geniza. What it means is they wished it's borrowed from the law that a Sefer Torah, when it deteriorates, it place it in the ground, and which means to say they don't. What they're doing is it disintegrates and it's not in writing anymore. The same thing over here. They wish to remove the quality, the halachic status of the written word from Ecclesiastes. If they would do that, you wouldn't be permitted to write it. If you wouldn't be permitted to write it, it would become oral. Only scholars would know it, and the masses would soon forget it because it's not available in writing. And the scholarship, the masses aren't really scholars, so it would be lost pretty soon from among the masses. But the reason why the rabbis wish to do that is because they said that anything which appears on the surface as contradictory and requires analysis on it should not be in the hands of the public, because it's just going to confuse them.
Rabbi?
Yes.
You got about 15 seconds.
Okay.
I've been trying to get your attention.
I'm sorry.
All right, go.
Okay. So therefore what they did was they concluded that it's not going to harm the public, because the beginning of the book and the end of the book maintains the basic premise that one must follow God's commandments, and that they decided would have a greater effect on the people than the confusing middle. And people would simply say, we don't understand it, but this is his conclusion, and they wouldn't be harmed by the fact that